How close are robots, VW, getting to having true human-type emotion? Is that going to happen?
It's one of those things that roboticists debate back and forth about a huge amount, and whether it's a good idea or not for that. So one of the people that appears in the book works on, and they call this social robotics. It's, and their belief is that if you can get robots that act human, it'll be easier for people to interact with them. You'll be able to sell more of them because that's where the money is. And so he's at work designing, for example, robots that mimic facial responses, you know, figure out if you're smiling or not, building ones that look like little kids. Their idea is that in many ways it'll be like if you remember that Steven Spielberg movie AI.
Oh, it's a great movie.
Yeah, so the robot in that was a toy that grows up with the little kid. And the idea, they're trying to build the real-world version of that where the robot will get smarter and smarter and more attached to the little kid that grows up with it. Now, the same thing, take this over, and this is what interests me, to the military world. So, for example, in the military found out that they did a study with different teams working with a robot. And one, the robot was emotionless, so to speak. It just would say, you know, target acquired, taken out. Another group were given robots that had a personality, a fake personality, but it had a personality. So it would say things like, great to work with you. Way to go. Let's do it. And, and what they found out is that the team with the personality robots actually did better in these military exercises, sure, in these war games, than the other way around. So they're building in these systems with these kind of emotions. Now, the ripple effect of that, the sort of, you know, let's play this forward, is what happens when the soldiers get attached to their robots, because you're using them because you want them to be cheap, disposable, and you don't care whether they get blown up or not. But one of the things that's funny is that we found that soldiers are actually starting to build psychological bonds with their robots. For example, once this has already happened in Iraq, there was a robot that got disabled under enemy machine gun fire, and his controller ran out 50 yards under heavy machine gun fire to rescue it.
Oh, my.
You don't go rescue your lawnmower. You don't go rescue your Humvee. But he did it. There's another one where a robot was blown up, and the soldier takes it into the repair yard, literally cradling it in his arms. And he's got tears running down his eyes.
Oh, my.
And they say, you know, they tell him, look, we can't fix it. And he says, I don't want another robot. I want, and he called the robot Scooby-Doo. He's like, I want Scooby-Doo back. I don't want another robot. Now, we laugh about this. We go, you know, this is silly. This is weird. How could they do that? But for me, there's a couple things here. You know, that robot, even though it was a machine, saved his life.
Saved his life. Absolutely.
And then the other part of it is that he experienced probably the most, you know, searing things that a human can go through, you know, being under enemy fire. And he experienced it with a machine. And he doesn't want people to just look at it. He doesn't want to think about it.
It's not a machine to him.
Exactly. Now, so all of these real-world examples already happened, documented in the book. These are with robots that don't have any kind of personalities or emotion. So what happens when you got one that has emotion, has personality?
Or has a human face to it.
Exactly.
And which we'll talk about.
Yeah. And so that you may actually have to give them a somewhat annoying personality, so you really don't care whether it gets blown up or not. I mean, this is the kind of, you know,
I know some people with the software we can put in for that, with those personalities.
And, you know, this other thing of personalities is think about issues like torture. No one would mind if I, you know, my computer breaks sometimes, and I'll slap it and, you know, try and knock it in.
Right, shake it a little bit.
You know, your lawnmower doesn't work. You give it a good kick. Well, how would you react if you saw someone giving, you know, a human-looking system a kick, a slap in the face?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, we know in the movies that, you know, Wall-E or R2-D2, I mean, they're completely fake, and yet we get really sad and emotional when bad things happen to
how
them.
About that Johnny Five? Remember him?
Well, I don't know. I could give him a slap. I don't know. But the point is that, you know, we have to start to wonder about not just what are the ethics of these systems themselves, but how do we interact with these systems? And it actually connects to the debates over torture. A lot of people say the reason we don't allow torture of humans isn't what it does to the bad guys, but what it does to us, that if you cross that line, it creates some ethical boundaries, and it makes it easier to do other bad things. So just avoid it. It's sort of the think about, like, you know, you're a parent and you see your kid roasting ants with a mirror and mm-hmm. a lens like that, and you see them laughing about it. You probably aren't so worried about the ants. You're more worried about what it says about little Johnny, that he's delighting in doing that. And so it's the same thing. If you saw someone beating up a robot one day, you won't go, oh, I feel bad for the robot. But you go, whoa, maybe we shouldn't allow that just because it opens up a lot of other dark corners.